outside in our vestibule between our copies of UU World magazine and the catalog for the In Spirit bookstore is a stack of blue bookmarks. Perhaps you've seen them. They look like this. Each one lists 10 great reasons to join a Unitarian Universalist community. The older editions of this bookmark listed 10 good reasons to do the same, so things in the vestibule are already much improved. Good is so much better than great. Great is so much better than good. You might want to take a look at the updated Decalogue after service today to see which ones resonate the most with you. I especially liked number 3, which declares that in congregations such as ours, you will find inspiration and support to join a centuries-old liberal tradition of reason and imagination. Reason and imagination are paired in our religious tradition. They are not contrary to one another. One of the best ways we can exercise both in tandem is by sharing stories with each other. Whether those come to us through mythic traditions or popular culture or children's literature or sacred texts. For the past 3 years, I've been part of a monthly Bible study for UU ministers that was started by a retired minister from Boston. Lately, we have been on a rotation, taking turns presenting themes, passages, or entire books. In May, I presented the Book of Esther, a shorter work in the Hebrew Scriptures that provides the story behind the joyous Jewish festival of Purim. It is also one of only 2 or 3 books in the Bible named for a woman, depending upon how you count the books of the Bible. And nowhere in its 10 fairly brief chapters does it mention God or even a life of faith. Perhaps this explains why the Protestant reformer Martin Luther, who famously proclaimed the scriptural basis of his theology through the Latin phrase, sola scriptura, hated the book with such vehemence. He did not believe that it should ever have been included in the canon and lamented that it had been written at all. Knowing this, of course, heightened its appeal for me. Those of you unfamiliar with the book, with this book of the Bible, it tells the story of a Jewish community living in diaspora in a Persian kingdom under a seemingly benign sovereign. This king has married Queen Esther, whom he weds only for her beauty. He has no inkling that she is Jewish. He has no notion of who she is really at all. When a malefactor in the court suggests to the king that the Jewish people in his kingdom are disloyal to the crown, the king issues an edict for their destruction. Yet Esther's adoptive father convinces her to intervene on behalf of her people. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish, he tells her. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for such a time as this. Esther understands the risks both of revealing her identity and displeasing the king with such a surprising request. Yet she replies, I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Esther does not perish, though, and in fact manages to save her people. For this reason, she has been celebrated in Jewish communities for countless generations. Obviously, hers is a story that could have ended otherwise, catastrophically even. We all know that the Bible is not filled primarily with books containing happy endings. What makes Esther unique is its speculative tone, its honest curiosity about why things are the way they are. It does not presume anything about providence. It refuses to draw any clear distinctions between happenstance and destiny. It flirts, openly flirts, with fatalism. Who knows, perhaps, is its keynote. Esther evidently does not know why she is in the position she is in, living undercover, exiled to a foreign court. If she perishes there, that will simply be another fact of her existence. She only knows that her situation is what it is and nothing else. Her leadership is courageous in the most understated way imaginable. And if I perish, I perish. For this reason alone, she is a hero of mine, a powerful spiritual model. Her story is told in its entirety each year in the annual Jewish celebration of Purim, but today, in churches spanning the globe, Christians are hearing about her. The Book of Esther appears as a reading in the Revised Common Lectionary scheduled for September 26th. Those believers who follow the lectionary read the same sacred texts in rotation on an extended three-year schedule. In our UU congregations, we do not follow the lectionary. Our canon has not been sealed, and the scriptures we use are eclectic and prone to proliferate. That does not mean that we should not refer to them, however, and revisit them routinely. There's something about reading a text that is revered by a community with a reach that is often worldwide and handed down through millennia. The practice of applying it to our own lives can help us feel less alone and more connected to a truth larger than ourselves, the Reverend John Lou Johnstone writes in her book, Scripture Unbound, a Unitarian Universalist Approach. This reflection is the beginning of wisdom. Scripture then can illuminate how individually and collectively we have come to where we are and can push us toward more profound truth. She starts her consideration of various scriptures from a range of religions with a very close reading of the Book of Esther. She begins with that thrilling exchange between Esther and her adoptive father and ends it with the king's response to Esther. What is your request? It shall be given to you, even to the half of my kingdom. What do we ask of the text that we regard as scripture, I wonder? And what do they provide us in return? Throughout the fall months here, I will be leading an educational series, as Michael mentioned this morning, called Inspired and Inspiring, Engaging Scripture and Community, and it is organized around Reverend Johnstone's book. We all come from somewhere. None of us lives in a cultural void, she writes in it. Whatever our faith background, educational background, reading habits, or media consumption, we have been shaped both subtly and directly by concentric circles of culture. And all of these cultural circles have some relationship to scripture. So we would do well to consider why scriptures survive, much as Esther herself survives. Who knows? Perhaps we do. Perhaps we could conceive of some reasons why they have, apart from any theological framework. In the lengthier apocryphal versions of Esther, novel chapters are added to the book and existing chapters are expanded. In my May Bible study, I discovered that these versions were not nearly as compelling as the original. They were barely readable in parts. Several pious passages were added to fill in a few of the blanks. A divine plan was plotted and followed through to the point of tedium. What was diminished in the extension of the book was the human dimension, which is usually nestled in a series of unknowns. unlike Luther, and I am unlike him in so many regards, I can appreciate the rationale for including Esther's story in a holy book, just as it is, an unvarnished form of scripture. The American novelist Jonathan Safran Foer quipped, "Just because you're an atheist doesn't mean you wouldn't love for things to have a reason why they are." And in that godless book of Esther, people are willing to reach for those reasons together, even with uncertain grasping. It can be humbling for us to admit that we do not completely understand the reasons why things are the way they are, how we got to where we are. And yet, knowing this invites us to exercise our imaginations more fully. Then we can join our imagination to reason, and vice versa. In doing so, we can actually consciously expand our collective religious capacity. So, regardless of what gets listed on that blue bookmark outside in our vestibule, regardless of the total number of your reasons, regardless of whether they qualify as great or merely good, each of you has your reasons for being here at UU Wellesley Hills. I know. Some of them might be Esther-like reasons. You suddenly found yourself in a strange place or married outside the family faith. Or maybe you grew weary of living a lie and denying aspects of your identity. You might be able to readily articulate your reasons, or you might not, not yet, at least. The stories we share with one another become interwoven here, and our motivations and choices get strung together to become these stories. These strings of stories are interwoven into the fabric that winds the scrolls of the sacred scripture of this particular faith community. And we understand them better only through study. We can always engage them imaginatively. It is certainly possible to know the questions we are asking without ever knowing the answers.